I'm Nyla Boodoo, host of The 21st. The big game's on Sunday, which means all eyes are on football. The sport also happens to be Kevin Jackson's area of scientific expertise. The senior research scientist at the Beckman Institute brings an unusual perspective to his work on brain injuries because he first came to the University of Illinois to play college football. He's now developing a cooling helmet that may help with athletes' head injuries, and he's taking his research out into the field, literally, in this case, Memorial Stadium, where this past season he's been putting these cooling helmets into action. And he's here with us now to talk about his research. Kevin, thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
I think we should start with everyone thinks they know what a concussion is, which you have said in the past, but you also say that concussions are multifaceted injuries. What do you mean by that?
Meaning that the concussion will affect a person differently in each case. So you can't, like an ACL repair, you know, if you have ACL tear, normally it's a 6-month recovery. So you know exactly what you're going to get. With a concussion, it's a little bit hard to say where you got hit at and how long this person would actually be out. In sports specifically, it's hard because depending on what sport you play, like in football, you're going to expect to get hit in the head again. So do you want to put this person back out in a week after he passes all his things, we'll put him back out in 2 weeks? So it's multifaceted, meaning that it affects each person differently.
And that brings us to your cooling helmet in terms of treating these traumatic head injuries. And I should say to everybody, it looks like you would imagine it would, right? Kind of like a freezer pack that you would throw into your cooler, but it's a helmet that you put over your head. What's the point of it? What does it do?
Well, there's two different kinds we have. So the one that's in the video is more of a, we call it a shorter term cooling, where it is actually coming out of your freezer. So you can pull it in your freezer, pull it out, take it with you for games for short intermediate cooling. So for about an hour, if you want to cool the person down after a sporting event, after heat problems. The other one that we have is a longer term cooling, which is it can go up to about 6 hours running on batteries. If you want to plug it in, it can go all night, depending on how well the cooling pack inside stays cold. And that's put in the freezer and just thrown into the pack itself. So it does look like what you just mentioned before. It looks like just a fancy ice bag that you can just pull out of the freezer and put it on your head.
And why is it so important for athletes to do that after a head injury?
Well, what we've been looking into is some of the stuff they've shown in animal studies is that heat can be a very bad thing for your brain after a concussion or after a head injury. And so what we're looking for is if we can bring the body, say you're playing a sport and your temperature is about 102 degrees. What we're trying to do is bring your temperature back down to normal thermia, which is the normal 98.6. So what our goal is not to bring you to a hypothermic state, but just bring you back to normal thermia so your brain can start working on not worried about getting rid of the heat, but actually worrying about the repair it has to do itself. And some of the things that cooling can do is also beneficial for the brain itself after an injury.
When you're thinking about this research, I know you're in the middle of this, but what have you seen so far with how this is beneficial?
Right now, we haven't got to the point of putting in for concussion aspects, but we have used it for heat-related things. This year, some of the players wore it during the North Carolina game and for the heat-related problems that they were having. Instead of the cold towels, players were preferring the actual cooling helmet themselves because you get more coverage than you do with a normal towel, ice towel you wrap around. It doesn't get your uniform wet. So that's in the first phase of it. The next phase is to try to see how well it does cool the core temperature down after an injury or after a sport. We don't have to put it in an injury or after the sport themselves. So during practice, we'll monitor the athlete's temperature and then put the cooling helmet on compared to the traditional way of putting them in an ice tub or a cold towel around the neck to see how effective this device actually is in that regards.
And are they expensive? What do you think the biggest barrier to these being used?
The reason we have two different ones is because the expensive versus non-expensive. The expensive one is the single unit one, which one that we built.
The one that has the battery pack.
And there you go. The one is the 6-hour, time frame, or you can plug it in. That one's because it has a motor and everything else that goes with it. The other one's a little bit less expensive, probably around $200 or so, a little bit more, a little bit less. I don't know the full price of them, to be honest. The company's been gracious to work with us, so I don't ask them those things. They're willing to give it to us for the research aspects of things. But that is more reliable for me because the one unit is a single unit. So only one person can use it at a time, the more expensive one. So if you had 15 people who had head injuries, you can only work with one at a time. Whereas the single unit, the actual individual package you pull out of freezer, I can do multiple people at once. So each player can have their own helmet. So after practice, each player can just grab them like grabbing a Gatorade and just throw one on and sit in the locker room or sit on the way home from a bus or from a game or to the airport.
You were a running back. You played for Illinois a couple of years ago.
We'll
say a couple years ago. How about that? Is it when you're out on the field, I imagine you maybe have a different perspective when you last season were looking at guys and games and saying, hey, maybe he needs to put one of these cooling helmets on. Do you think the culture of sports around injuries, especially because of all the news we've seen over the past year, particularly in regards to the concussions in the NFL, do you feel like it's changing the way that coaches and trainers and even athletes are looking at injuries?
Completely. I think the biggest thing that we have is we're being more educated about it. You know, what actually is a concussion, what actually happens after a concussion, whether it's a parent being understanding that your kid mood may change. You may see it better as a parent because you're around your kid every day. Whereas the same thing for a coach, you're around these players versus a scientist coming on, you know, just seeing it for once out of the blue. I might say he has a problem, but if he acts that way on a normal basis, a coach or an athletic trainer or a medical staff person may know a little bit better. So I think the education of both the players, coaches, and parents are very well acknowledging it now.
When you mentioned parents, do you think, considering what you know about brain development, do you think that young kids should be playing football?
That's a tough question sometimes. I think they should. I think they shouldn't pull kids out. I think what football does add to it is, besides the injury aspect of it, I think if you're well coached and you have a person who understands it and everybody gets what a concussion is or injury itself, I think it's a fun sport to play. It gives teaches a lot of things for young boys and young people who play the sport itself. But I wouldn't say no, it's not safe for the kids to play. I think it's the age level I would worry about. I wouldn't do less than 5 or 6 where I see some of these 6-year-olds. I would think at least 10 or 11 where you have a little bit more understanding of how to do proper techniques.
Okay. And also, I mentioned contact as well.
Yes.
Okay. Whose responsibility do you think it is? Do you think it's the athletes? Do you think it's parents? Do you think it's coaches or trainers?
I think it's all of the above. Honestly, the first one is the athlete itself. You have to think about, you know, we always think about roll my ankle, I'm going to be all right, just tape it up and get me back out there. Because you don't want to let your teammates down. And that's a hard thing for an athlete to want to say, I'm going to pull myself out because I don't want to let my teammates down. But you also have to realize that it's a game. You know, your life is bigger than that game. Win or loss, you got to take that consequence of whatever happens. But you have to think about yourself when you wake up in the morning, am I going to be okay 15, 20 years from now? You know, I give it all on the line now. Same thing I look at military. You put your life on the line for a lot of things. You got to be careful what you want to say 20, 30 years from now, what is going to be affecting me doing this 20 years from now.
Okay. So this is a bonus question for people who are listening online. I wanted to ask you a little bit more about how you got interested in science. When you were here at the University of Illinois playing college football, was science your ultimate goal?
College science has been my ultimate goal since I was probably a little kid. My mom and sister both had diabetes. So seeing that debilitating disease affect my family made me curious about science. What can I do to help them out? So when I got an opportunity to get a scholarship to play, that was always my goal, to get a scholarship to play somewhere where I can actually use this sport playing avenue to get an education. So that's what I really focused on when I first got to college, even though I don't think I started off in the right way. You know, I started off as a biochemistry major, switched to biology, to microbiology, and ended up with an animal science degree.
You mentioned your sister and your mother. I wonder if you could just go back to that moment, and if there was there a specific incident that led you to science?
I think the biggest thing, like I said, my mom and sister both having diabetes, the biggest first incident of me curious, and I was always a curious kid, I think I was about 6 or 7, and my sister went into a diabetic coma. She's 10 years older than me, and I didn't know what to do. I felt helpless. And we're sitting there trying to get sugar in her system and trying to get her, you know. And so that scared me as a kid. Like, see somebody that you care about so much and they're suffering and you couldn't do anything about it. So that made me always curious. If I ever had a chance to do something as I got older, I would try to find something to help that out or help science out in certain ways. It's to be funny, to be honest, I never knew what a doctor was, like a PhD was, before I even got to college. The only doctor I ever really thought about was Bill Cosby growing up, because that's the only doctor I saw on TV besides Quincy, if anybody knows that, if the old heads.
Yeah, I think people know Quincy.
But other than that, I really didn't know what a PhD, didn't understand it, but I knew I wanted to be a doctor somehow, some way. And I think when I met Dr. Matt Wheeler over in animal science, that changed a lot of the way I looked at science completely. He worked with stem cells, and that really got me interested in doing some of the research that I got into.
And this past season, how many seasons have you been? Has it been just this year or the year before that you've been working with the football team?
Just this year was the first year to fully get some of the stuff that we're doing.
And so
now,
when the guys see you on the field, do they think you're a coach? Do they realize that you were a PhD, that you were actually Dr. Jackson from the Beckman Institute?
Some of the players may know. Some of the players have said it. I don't try to go out there and say I'm Dr. Jackson. I treat it as I treat it as a normal player. Probably most of them probably thought I was one of the coach and the administrators that are coming over. I don't think they saw me as Dr. Jackson who was doing some of the research that I do.
And do you think that, as you said earlier, they maybe trust you more when you say to them, hey, maybe you should go put this cooling helmet on? When we think about especially concussions and athletes, do you think we're at the point where especially young players, guys who are playing in the Big Ten, do you think that they're willing to say, hey, I've been hurt, you need to take me out of the game? That's a tough call for
a lot of
people.
I think that's a tough call in any sport, especially in athletics. We don't want to talk about football itself. It's hard to take a person off the field because you feel like somebody's going to come in and take your spot and play. So it's hard to say, and you're pumped up on adrenaline at the same time, that if I'm hurt, am I hurt or am I injured? So you always think that in your head, I'm a little bit injured, I can keep playing. But if I'm hurt, I'm going to take myself off the field in the same sense. So I think it's hard to say. I think a lot of my, like I said, the education of it, do I really want to risk this for myself? You know, I got to think about it long term, not short term anymore. Like, we didn't have all these tests when I played 20-something years ago. So it's a big different mentality. I was telling somebody the other day, even back then in the late 70s or 80s, they had smelling salts. You don't see that anymore on the sidelines because we realized that.
You don't want to be reviving someone if they're out.
But we had that before. You know, if you felt like you got dinged a little bit, they give you put a smelling salt by your nose, wake you up a little bit. But I think we've been more educated since then. So I think that's the biggest thing I can say that the athletes trust, is that I'm not looking at it from a researcher's point of view. I'm coming to them from an athletic point of view, why you want to be well understood and what's happening.
That said, you mentioned warning signs. From an educational standpoint, what do you think parents, in particular parents who may be listening, need to look out for with their maybe high school students or younger who are playing football?
I think the biggest thing is, you know, drowsiness, sleep, sensitive to noise. If they come home with, say, they had a head injury or things of that nature, the biggest thing that, about concussions that we didn't mention earlier, it's really not the single concussion that we're really concerned about that's in the news. It's more of the repetitive head hit. So putting yourself back out there after you've had a concussion. And these are some of the guys who don't even show any clinical signs that they've had a concussion. So you may have been banged up on a Saturday, shook it off and have a headache on Monday or Tuesday, but didn't realize that concussion happened on Saturday. And so you keep continuing to play without going to get any help. You just think you've had a headache for that day, not thinking about the concussion you may have had on Saturday. And that's the hardest group to try to really catch. And that's part of what of our research is trying to educate, you know, okay, you may have got hit on Saturday and you have a headache today. What can we do about that? You know, try to move forward. And I think that's the hardest thing to try to get the athletes to understand.
And what would you, from your perspective as someone who played college football and is now a scientist who's researching this, where would you like to see the science on this? Would you like there to be eventually, do you think we're going to be at a point where we'll know from one hit, we'll have some sort of analysis and know how dangerous that is, or have some sort of, I don't know if there are smart helmets or what kind of thing is going to be out there?
They do have, I mean, technology is trying to catch up to a lot of this, but the hardest thing about it is each athlete's going to be different to try to correlate that to saying he took a 100G hit versus somebody who took a 2G hit, and the 2G hit is concussed and the 100G hit is fine. Meaning that, is it the impact? Is it the genetics? We don't know. And those are some of the things that our research is going to look forward to looking into, is some of the genetic biomarkers, some things that may happen that we can take it out of their hands. My biggest thing as a research scientist is I don't want you to have to answer. I want your body to tell me that you're not able to play. So whether we do an MRI screen, whether we do an assessment that takes away you answering a question, but your eyes move a certain way, we do eye tracking, things that they know biologically you can't change. Heart rate, blood pressure, you can't alter those things on a normal basis. So if we can start taking those considerations instead of doing some of the tests that we're subjectively asking athletes, how many fingers am I holding up? Now I got a test that looks at the eye movement. Does the eye pupils dilate a certain way? Does the eyes move a certain way? So those are some of the tests that we want to develop here and some of the research that we're doing.
Kevin Jackson is a senior research scientist in the Thermal Neurosciences Laboratory at the University of Illinois' Beckman Institute. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.